This is the Roundup on CBC Radio 1. I'm Kevin Sylvester, sitting in for Bill Richardson. And time for The Mystery Project, which is at a new time. Yes, mark your schedules, circle your calendars. Fridays in part two of the Roundup. That's the new home for the Mystery Project, 1 hour earlier than it used to be. And today we also begin a three-part series, Dr. Johnson Investigates. It's by Richard Brayshaw. Takes us back to London, 1776. And our hero is the famous lexicographer, Dr. Samuel Johnson, aided by his friend and biographer, James Boswell. It's kind of a, well, kind of a Watson-Holmes matchup. The action begins with Jane Boswell holding forth in a coffee house. And soon you'll hear the voice of Leo McKern, starring as the roly-poly Dr. Johnson. And the topic of discussion is that play. The Scottish play. You know, the one I can't say the name of.
Banquo's murderer discovered by Samuel Johnson, Doctor of Laws, and his companion, James Boswell. Had any man in London propounded this fantasy a month ago, I'd have called him mad or drunk. Yet today the talk in the coffee houses is of nothing else. How my distinguished friend Dr. Johnson brought to light one infamous murder and prevented another is the subject of universal admiration. I should flatter myself were I to claim any credit for this achievement. Nevertheless, I believe I was to some degree of assistance to him. And my concern now is to record, while they are fresh in my memory, the singular events that have plagued Mr. Garrick and the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane, during the past week. It began one evening at the Somerset Coffee House in the Strand. I remember Dr. Johnson was expatiating about the theatre and upon his friend and former pupil, David Garrick.
Why, sir, artifice. Artifice and experience. The actor must employ artifice, yet the passions he portrays must spring from human experience.
You mean, Johnson, that the actor must truly feel the emotions he expresses?
By no means, Bossy. He must counterfeit, he must imitate, but that imitation springs from nature. This is the actor's craft.
Art and nature. A modicum of both and a preponderance of neither.
Just so, sir. There are some players, accomplished ones too, who become so adept at counterfeiting that they cannot distinguish between what is true and what is fictitious. Fact and fantasy become so commingled in their minds that they pass from one to the other unawares. You may converse with them for an hour at a time without discovering their real feelings.
For example, sir, even now, conspiracy, regicide, and armed insurrection are impending on the stage at Brewery Lane. But who is to comprehend what hidden passions truly activate the protagonist?
Exactly, Bossy. For all we know, Macbeth may be more exercised in his mind by the payment of his tailor than by the murder of the King of Scotland.
Beginners.
Come along, gentlemen. On stage, please. You know Mr. Garrick hates unpunctuality.
Hook me up at the back, Finny. There's a dear. What's the house like tonight?
Oh, packed to the roof, my dear. And all come to see you.
Oh, of course, Finny. Oh, can't you see the critics' eulogies? Sarah Siddons' performance called for universal admiration. In the banquet scene, she consumed mouldy bread and cold tea with the utmost conviction. And her five lines as the second apparition in Act Four evoked rapturous applause.
Have patience, dearie. You'll be famous one day.
Oh, I wish Mr. Garrick would, sir.
One of these days, Mr. Garrick's going to eat his words. You'll see.
Witches on stage, please. To your places, gentlemen. Everyone ready, please. Quiet, everybody, quiet. Curtain going up.
When shall we three meet again? In thunder, lightning, or in rain?
When the hurly-burly's done.
one. When the battle...
I'd be obliged, Mr. Barry, if you'd give me the correct cue this evening.
I'd be obliged, Mr. Warburton, if you'd keep your correct position. You walked upstage enough.
That is untrue.
You call me a liar.
You moved downstage. You did it deliberately. You can't deny it.
I am not answerable to you, sir.
You would prefer to answer to Mr. Garrick.
Mr. Garrick. We all know who his toadies are.
Do you refer to me, Mr. Barry?
Gentlemen, quiet, please. The audience will hear you.
Garrick is a master of his craft, sir. He has advanced the dignity of his profession.
He's a very sprightly writer, too.
And all this supported by great wealth of his own acquisition. If all this had happened to me, I should have had a couple of fellas with long poles walking before me to knock down everybody that stood in the way. Yet, Garrick speaks to us, Fuzzy.
Oh, he's a very good man. A charitable man.
No, nay more. A liberal man. He's given away more money than any man in England. There may be a little vanity mixed, but he has shown that money is not his first object.
Yet Foot used to say of him that he walked out intending to do a generous action, but turning the corner of a street, he met with the ghost of a Hickney, which frightened him.
Why, sir, that's very true, too. I remember drinking tea with him long ago. Peg Woffington made it, and he grumbled at her for making it too strong. he'd then begun to feel money in his purse and didn't know when he should have enough of it.
He has enough now, sir. There's no question.
Oh, he has much money, but not enough. No man ever had enough.
You're pleased to be cynical, sir.
No, sir. Voracious. If money purchased freedom from care, Davy would be a happy man. But he has his worries.
I hear there are troubles in the company.
Oh, there are always troubles in the company. Players are contentious folk. Barry, for instance, there's an overweening rogue.
Oh, they say Spranger Barry's a fine Macbeth.
Well, that we shall judge for ourselves tomorrow night. Come, we must bestir ourselves. It's nearly 9 o'clock. Davy promised to meet us at the Prince's Tavern after he'd seen the curtain rise.
Barry, this is too much. Last night the wrong cue, and tonight you cut my final speech completely.
A trifling error, Warburton. I always forget the naked frailty of speech. I can't think why.
That's a lie, sir. You did it on purpose.
I find it hard to concentrate, sir, when I'm being upstaged. After all, I am the lead.
Oh, you admit it was deliberate?
I admit nothing of the sort. Now, kindly withdraw. You know this is my quick change.
I'll not be dismissed, sir. I demand an apology.
Mr. Warburton, sir. I am inexpressibly grieved by the loss of your immortal speech. Had you as many lines as you have hairs, I would not wish them a fairer death. Now, pray excuse me.
You're pleased to be flippant, sir. I see you're determined to provoke me.
The provocation is yours, sir. You presume on your reputation as a swordsman. You want a pretext, don't you? You seek my challenge so that you have a choice of weapons.
Why should I quarrel with you?
As to that, Mr. Warburton, you know best. Professional jealousy, perhaps?
Oh, no, sir. I know an inferior actor when I see one.
Well said, sir. And isn't the mirror your worst enemy? Then it must be personal jealousy.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, sir, your attitude to my wife.
What of your wife, Mr. Barry?
She does not relish your odious attentions.
Do you accuse me?
I am not accusing, Mr. Warburton. I am after stating a fact. So it's a letter you are, a goat, a fumbler with other men's wives.
Oh, your wife flatters herself. I've no great desire to catch the pox.
Why, you
I take it, are less fastidious.
Why, you damned scoundrel. Never take your soul. Is that good enough for you?
Thank you, Mr. Barry. That will do admirably. My seconds will call upon you.
Mr. Barry, Mr. Warburton, please. On stage, Act 3, Scene 1. Mr. Barry and Mr. Warburton, please.
Johnson, she said, you smell. No, madam, I replied, you smell. I stink. Oh, Davy, you have a February face. What amiss?
You may well ask. There's been more trouble with Rafferty. I've had to dismiss him. We'll have a new property master on Monday.
Rafferty, is he the one
who... He's the one who drinks, yes. He was blind drunk last night. set the wrong goblet in the banquet scene. I had a special one made, you see, with a square base so it wouldn't roll.
Yeah.
Rafferty sets one with a round base. In comes Banquo's ghost. Spranger hurls down the cup. It rolls downstage, bounces over the footlights and cuts the eye of a footman standing in the pit. And what was Spranger's next line? Tell me that.
I know it, Davy. Thou hast no speculation in those eyes which thou dost glare with.
Exactly. And the whole house roared.
Confound Rafferty. Confound Macbeth. There are times when I hate it.
Oh, for shame, Davy. Tis a noble play.
It's a damned unlucky one, and there's an end on't. Consider this week. A drunken property master, George Warburton, and his gallantries. Tom and Meg Blunt fighting like the Kilkenny cats. And nothing but quarrels, fightings, tantrums, and jealousies. Where's it all going to end?
Tom, you must leave the dressing room. I'll not quarrel with you during the play. How can I give a performance when I'm upset?
Devil take it, madam. A man has a right to know where his wife's been all day.
I've told you. I was at the market. Then I walked in the park.
Alone?
Yes, Tom, alone. Then I came straight here to the theatre.
Hmm. And I must starve while you take your solitary walks abroad. What of your duty to your husband?
What, sir, of your duty to your wife?
How dare you mention that again? Just you listen to me.
No, Tom, you listen to me. I've had enough of your tantrums and jealousies. You can do as you please. Spend your time drinking with your cronies and playing cards with George Warburton, with no thought for me. I must sit in our lodgings awaiting your beck and call. Well, I'll endure it no longer.
But for my wife.
I'm an actress in my own right. I'm not just Mrs. Blunt. You know very well Mr. Garrick engaged you only because you're my husband.
That's a lie, madam. A monstrous lie. God's life, I was playing leads when you were wearing pinafores. I need no assistance from you.
You make that very plain. It's not a wife you require, but a slave. Well, I'll not be treated like that.
Once and for all, no.
Oh, let me go. You're hurting my arm.
Listen to what I say, woman.
Tom, Tom! Are you coming? Oh, forgive me. I didn't mean to intrude.
It's all right, George. Tom and I have finished our little talk. Go on, Tom. You mustn't keep the cards waiting, must you?
As you please, madam. We'll discuss it later.
Yes.
Come on, George.
Now then, listen. End of the intermission, ladies and gentlemen. End of the intermission.
Act
four,
please.
Act four. End of
the intermission. Playing very small tonight, Mr. Payne.
And me, Warburton. I've no option.
Right, gentlemen. Uh-huh. This turn wins.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... Good God. Oh, damned hard luck, Payne. Nine of hearts. Well, that's a sovereign for Blunt.
Oh, thank you.
£2 from Payne.
You have the devil's own luck, Blunt.
Lucky in cards and in love, eh, Tom?
Yes.
Oh, what's the matter? Look like you've seen a ghost.
It's nothing, George. Nothing.
Oh, you will?
No, I'm all right. Come on, make haste. Payne's on stage in a few minutes' time.
Aye, so he is. Well, here's your chance, Mr. Payne. Last four cards in the case. Bottom one's in hock. Call for the next three?
No, thank you.
Oh, come on, man. Don't forget the house pays 4-1.
Mm. If I win, and takes 5-1 if I lose.
Oh, come, to be a man. Faint heart never won fairer.
Warburton, how much am I in?
Let's see. I've got the reckoning here somewhere. I'll make it £18.07.
What?
Well, it's here. You can see for yourself.
Good God, man. I didn't realise. I can't.
Can't what, Mr. Payne?
I can't go on. That's my limit.
Oh, come, Mr. Payne. Surely you can go a little further. I'll make you an offer. Double acquits on the last three.
I don't.
Oh, come on, man. Here are the cards already played. It's got to be 3 out of the remaining 4.
Yes, but in what order?
Oh, I'll double the odds in your favour.
Ah.
Call the turn. Go on, call. Then I'll tell you what I'll do.
Ace, 10 and king.
Mm. I'll give you double or quits for 2 aces and a 10.
Mm, a generous offer, Mr. Penn.
Are you on?
Very well.
Mm.
Turn up the cards.
Ace,
I can't pay.
Those who can't pay don't play, Mr. Payne. And you played.
I don't understand it. That king was played earlier.
Oh, nonsense, Mr. Payne. You can see for yourself. It wasn't on display.
That's what I don't understand.
Do you accuse Warburton of dishonesty? Do you call him a cheat, sir?
I don't know. Oh, God.
Oh, come, Mr. Payne, this won't do. A gentleman pays his gambling debts.
What am I to do? You'll have to accept a note.
A word of warning, Mr. Payne. The last time I had to employ debt collectors, they went about the business rather clumsily, indeed, brutally. An actor whose face is his fortune wouldn't want anything to do with them, I assure you.
I'm broke, I tell you.
Mr. Riley, Mr. Payne, Mr. Dunn, on stage, please. For Act 5, Scene 2. Mr. Riley, Mr. Payne, Mr. Dunn, please. Act 5, Scene 2.
Let's discuss it in the morning, Mr. Payne. Don't miss your call.
You must excuse me, gentlemen.
Of course.
Little Mr. Payne, a lamb to the slaughter.
Don't push him too hard, George.
Why not? He'll pay. God, he must. There are precious few chickens left to be plucked in this company.
And what will poor Robin do then, poor thing?
Why, then we go elsewhere. What do you say to Bath or Dublin?
Wherever you like. So long as we split 50-50.
50-50 it is, Tom, as always. Drinks, winnings, women. We've always played fair with each other. That is, until you got married.
We can still share drinks and winnings, George.
Aye, so we can. Do you never wonder, Tom, why Duncan and Banquo get murdered so early in the play?
No, George. Why?
Well, I say that they can relieve young Mr. Payne of his hard-won cash at Faro. Oh.
The lines must flow. They must roll off the tongue. Shakespeare wrote in verse, not in prose.
Yeah, very true, Davy, but he also wrote sense. And the sense is as important as the sound.
But the player's first purpose is to please the ear.
The players, sir, have got a kind of rant with which they run on without any regard either to accent or emphasis.
Oh, come, Jonathan, this is to deny them intelligence.
I simply affirm that actors are creatures of habit. There is a tradition of declaiming lines which they accept slavishly, without thought for the significance of what is spoken.
You're pleased to be sarcastic.
Well, now, I'll give you something to speak, with which you're little acquainted. Then we shall see how just my observation is. That shall be the criterion. Let me hear you repeat the ninth commandment. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Now come, Bossy, you first.
Why, it is perfectly simple. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor.
Yeah, so, now, Davy.
Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor.
Very fine, very rhythmical. But where's the sense?
Well, the sense is obvious.
Aye, but it needs emphasis. Now, what are the significant words? They are not and false witness. The line must be, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Rhythm must defer to sense.
That's very true, sir.
Isn't it so, David?
I'll make a bargain with you. Hmm? Do you not advise me on the dramatic art, and I'll not write a dictionary.
Well said, David. Let the cobbler keep to his last. Well, shall we see you tomorrow night?
Aye. We'll meet here at the Prince's Tavern after the performance. There are two seats for you in the circle. Bates will attend to you.
We look forward to the play with anticipation.
I hope you won't be disappointed.
Tell me, David, how is your new juvenile faring?
Oh, Bully.
The little Sittons. Oh, there's another bad bargain.
Oh, they say she's very beautiful.
Well, maybe. But she'll never make an actress.
Good night, David. Oh, he's in a black mood tonight.
A man whose fortune depends on popular acclaim stands ever on the edge of a precipice.
He didn't take kindly to your instruction.
Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Actors and clergymen, Bossy, actors and clergymen, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.
Mrs. Blunt,
I'll not be spoken to like that. It's always fitted perfect.
It doesn't fit now. You'll have to alter it.
I can't go altering costumes every day. You'll have to do it yourself.
You're the wardrobe mistress. It's your job.
When I made that costume a month ago, it was a perfect fit. You said so yourself. It's you. What's put on weight?
Damn your eyes, you stupid old cow!
Oh! Well, really. Whatever next? 20 years in the business and no one ever spoke to me like that before.
Oh. Hello, Binny. All finished for tonight?
Oh, just about, Miss Sarah.
Oh, what's the matter? You look upset.
Well, it's that Mrs. Blunt. I don't know what's come over her. She comes raging in here. Binny, you stupid bitch, she says. What have you done to my costume? It doesn't fit, she says. What a proper stag she was. Well, it's nothing to do with me. I ain't touched her costume.
Oh, she's not herself. She's got something on her mind.
Well, I must, son. There's no way to carry on. Well, after all, everyone's got their troubles.
Oh, well, don't be too upset, Binny. Oh. I'm sure she didn't mean it. She'll be round first thing tomorrow to apologize. Just you see.
Well, Garrick certainly can't complain about the takings. There isn't an empty seat.
Macbeth is a popular play, sir. And sprang a Barry as his adherents.
Well, we shall soon see if he deserves their loyalty. Here they come to illuminate the footlights.
How far that little candle throws his beams. So shines a good deed in a naughty world.
When shall we three meet again? In thunder, lightning, or in rain?
When the hurly-burly is done? When the battle's lost and won?
Barry's in good voice tonight.
Aye, sir, he has the grand manner. He has an air of command. But his performance lacks sensitivity. Oh, it's scarcely surprising. Davy claims that Macbeth's an impossible part to perform.
In what respect?
Why, sir, he's several characters all rolled into one. He's a successful soldier and so impervious to human suffering. Yet he's also a poet, a man of sentiment and sentiments. He sees visions. He has scruples. He lacks the singleness of purpose exhibited by his wife. The visionary and the man of action are scarcely reconcilable.
Well, sir, I played the role when I was at university. They never presented me with any difficulty.
My body, that says much for your command of the histrionic art. So we must tell Davy that his doubts are unfounded.
His horses go about almost a mile. But he does usually, so all men do. From hence to the palace gate, make it their walk.
A light! A light! Did he? Stand to it. It will be rain tonight. Let it come down!
Oh, treachery! Oh!
Who did strike out the lot?
What's not the way?
There's but one down. The sun is set. We have lost this half of our affair.
Well, let's away and say how much is done.
What do you think of that?
I thought it was a most unconvincing scene.
Oh, yet Warburton's a good actor.
Whoever saw a murdered man fall like that? He toppled over like a tree.
Oh, have you ever seen a man murdered, sir?
Well, no, sir, but I never saw it done like that on the stage before. And there was a pause, as if someone had missed a line.
You are right, sir. Banquo bids Fleance escape and revenge.
He must have forgotten.
Something's amiss, Posse. See, Davy's coming through the curtains.
Ladies and gentlemen, I beg your indulgence. There has been a mishap. Mr. Warburton has suffered an injury. Ladies and gentlemen, quiet, please. Quiet. I beg you.
Come, Posse. We must go behind the scenes. Davy needs help.
Thank you.
can't believe it.
Clear the stage, please, ladies and gentlemen. Come on, Mr. Blunt. Please clear the stage.
I was talking to him only half an hour ago, and now he's dead.
Come into the green room. Carefully now. Stand back there, please, ladies and gentlemen. Clear the stage.
You're quite sure he's dead, folks?
Yes, sir. No doubt about it.
Where's Rafferty?
Has anyone seen Rafferty?
He was on stage a few minutes ago.
Well, find him. All of you. Search the theater from cellar to roof.
Yes, sir.
Off with you. Oh, Samuel, body, almighty God, what a calamity. Did you see it happen?
Aye, Davy, we saw it.
Aye, did. It was the third murderer.
Who plays the part?
Rafferty. Now he's disappeared.
Sheriff, he's here. Rafferty, come quickly. Fetch a light, someone. Over here, under the staircase.
Oh, here he is, sir. I'm going to the wardrobe and I've seen his feet sticking out. Oh, look, he's covered in blood.
Oh, good God. He's dead, too.
No, he isn't. He twitched. He's unconscious.
Let me see. Let me see. Hold the light. Now, he's intoxicated, sir. The man's insensible with drink.
You're right, Johnson. Here. Hold the light closer. Blood on his face and cloak. And what's this? A dagger. Here, take it, Bossy.
Oh, you must excuse me, Garrick. All this blood, I feel altogether squeamish.
Infirm on purpose. Give me the dagger.
Here, Forbes, get two fellows. Have Rafferty out of there and put him in a tub of water. I want to hear what he has to say. And send for the watch. Quickly now.
Yes, sir. Nathaniel, John,
Lederhead. Oh, Samuel, Bossy. We need a drink. There's a bottle of brandy in my room. I'll come to you in a few minutes.
Just heard part one of Dr. Johnson Investigates, written by Richard Brayshaw. Leo McKern starred as Dr. Johnson. You may remember Leo McKern. He was Rumpole of the Bailey, that old TV series. You also heard Edward D'Souza as James Boswell. Boswell, that is. And you can join us next week for part two, in which Dr. Johnson tries to get to the bottom of our mysterious theatrical crime in question. The play was directed by Brian Miller. The executive producer of the Mystery Project is Bill Howell. And the coordinating producer is Barry Morgan.